following program is paid for by Little John Financial Services. The opinions and views expressed may not reflect those of Brook Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now it's True Wealth, presented by Little John Financial Services. Here is David Littlejohn with True Wealth on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Hey, gang. Welcome to the True Wealth. As you can tell by my voice, I am not David Littlejohn. He is out for the day, and this is Justin Bruggeman, and I'm with
Matt Dixon.
And we are covering for David, which I think he's out somewhere, and what I heard is he might have lost some luggage.
Yeah, he's probably out having too much fun, and here we are working away.
Yeah.
But we wish him well.
Of course. So, an interesting topic that Matt and I were talking about yesterday, which, of course, we plan on preparing a lot for, is, and of course, the day got busy and we didn't have a ton of time to, is bias as an investor.
Yeah, I feel like everyone has that like inner natural bias that they carry when it comes to investing. And I think today we're going to take an opportunity to go through a bunch of them. And you might be sitting there listening saying, hey, red flag, that's me. And if so, maybe you can use that to then say, hey, I figured out where my weakness is and I'm going to work to get better.
Yeah, absolutely. And so when I'm looking, thinking, which this is psychology, which I love the psychology. I'm not a psychologist.
Why do you love the psychology so much?
Because I love the way people's brains think.
Yeah.
And everybody is so different.
And there's not as much right and wrong with it either.
No.
So it's like, it's hard to get this one wrong, right? Because we're just diving into how the brain works. And you can't be too right or too wrong on that.
Which, not going too crazy into that, just because we're more talking about investing, which even Matt, so I know you have an older Ford pickup.
I do.
And a newer Ford pickup.
It's true.
So as an investment, which, by the way, this is not investment advice. This is just the conversation.
Nothing today is investment advice.
So if you're looking at a stock between, say, Ford and General Motors,
yes.
Where are you more inclined to lean towards?
I'm definitely leaning towards Ford. I own Ford. I've always owned Ford. I've never owned a GMC product. So, yeah, I've got a little bit of bias towards my Ford products.
Exactly. And so how much have you looked even the comparison between GM and Ford, not with a vehicle,
you know,
just as their
you've
stock?
Caught me red-handed because I've actually spent quite a bit of time looking at Ford stock, looking it over, knowing the numbers. And because I just don't love GM in nature, I don't even bother to look at the stock. You caught me red-handed.
Right. But does it mean it's not a good investment?
Oh, see, there's my bias again. I'm like, no, it's not. It's terrible.
I mean, I have the same bias. I can't say the vehicle market just because I've had a lot. But when I'm looking at even investments, like, I'm very biased towards Costco.
You know what? If you're not biased towards Costco, I'm like over here like something's wrong with you because everyone should love Costco, right? Like if you can go in there and get a pumpkin pie for what is it, like $6 and it's huge. It's like 4 pounds. It's like, how can you not love that?
Exactly. I mean, it's one of those is I'm in there at least once a week and I'm spending money there. So in my mind, I'm like, why am I not investing something that takes so much of my income?
Yeah.
Which, of course, if you walk into Costco and spend less than $200, you are a machine because it should be impossible.
Right. So that's your bias, right? But then you've got the diehard Walmart shopper who's like, well, I don't like paying the membership fee at Costco. I love Walmart because prices are low. There's your other bias because that's their store.
Correct. And even as a personal investor, even as an investment firm, we have biases that are different just because that's why we have a team. Because if we're based on just my perspective or your perspective or David's perspective or Wes's perspective, there'd be a lot of biases.
It's true.
So or biases.
It takes a team to kind of counterbalance everyone's ideas and say, hey, like, I know you're looking here, but I'm looking here. And then the group can come together and make a sound decision. So that's a good point.
And which what I mean by bias, which pulled up the definition, is you are either prejudiced in favor or against something.
Yeah.
And so
that's good to clarify.
Yeah. Could mean a lot of things. So circling back, I did a little bit of research. Is, I mean, there's whatever you read is going to tell you a little bit different, but there's some overlap between the few, which one of them that kind of stood out in my mind was mental accounting.
Mental accounting? Do tell. I want to know more.
So this is something I just found interesting. So if you find $100 on the street.
Okay. I've done that before, by the way. I was like 8 or 10 years old, and I was leaving a UCC basketball game. And I'm walking up the hill, and there's a $100 bill on the ground. I thought I was the richest kid in the world. Like, when you're 8 or 10 years old, and it's like 1999, you're balling, right?
Now you're like, I can almost get a tank of gas.
Who needs an allowance anymore, right? Like, I'm done. I'm retiring. I got $100.
So...
I'm hijacking your story. We're deep in the woods already, Justin.
So the mental accounting aspect. So you find $100 on the street.
Okay.
Are you more likely to, A, go buy something that you wanted because you just found $100, or invest it?
Can I choose option C? Is that allowed?
I'll take it.
Okay. Well, I guess it's kind of like, say, I would put it in my wallet and just try and not touch it, because I always like to have like at least $100 in my wallet for in case like I forget my credit card or something happens and I'm in a place where they don't take a credit card for some reason. I like the safety of cash in my wallet.
But if that's the case, shouldn't you've already had $100 in your wallet?
Yeah.
So now you have $200.
It's true. Yeah.
There's some fishing lures out there that you'd be like,
yeah, hey. I'd be spending it on fishing lures. Justin knows me too well.
And so the thought process is, which I actually think that sometimes what some people do is usually when it's out of your paycheck and you're saving money, mm-hmm. it's you save money. You're more likely to spend fun money than you are savings money.
That's true.
And so when you get, that's why I wonder if people, like when you get tax returns. The people that over...
They don't look at it as their own money, right? They look at it like, hey, this is some play money that's coming in, instead of actually viewing it as, hey, that's my next chunk into savings. Okay, I see where you're taking this.
And in theory, it's like, in your mind, it's, I didn't earn this. It was given to me, even though if you actually backtrack, is you did earn it.
Right.
You just loaned it to the IRS for a little while and it got back. But you are more likely to spend it on more extravagant things in your everyday life. So I just thought it was interesting. I've never actually realized or read that term. And when I went through it, I was like, that really makes a lot of sense.
So if I end up burning my $100 on fishing products, now I got to know. Like, the question's burning in my brain. What does Justin do with his $100? Are you going to the... Like, what are you going to do with it? Are you going to buy a new golf club? That doesn't really get you a full golf club anymore.
It's a partial one. Honestly, I give it to my wife, because if I have it, I'll just spend it on nonsense.
Oh, my gosh. Look at these brownie points you're earning on air. Well played, Justin. Well played.
I like to spend money. So that's...
You got to hand it over to her before you just burn right through it in a matter of...
What's that?
You got to hand it over before you just burn right through it. Yeah.
There's a lot of times, you know, coming home from a golf tournament or a Friday night scramble or something, that if I win anything, it goes straight to her.
There you go.
If I keep it, it's being spent.
So do we want to jump into a few of these different biases that we might see? I think there's like, what, 7 or 10 main biases? I don't think we'll get to all of them today, but we should at least touch on maybe a few.
No, it really depends on... You know, which site you look at, which study.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've seen anywhere from 3 to 5 to 15. It all varies. And the one I was sort of looking at was, there's about 8, which we might cover all of them, but we'll see how far we go.
Okay.
Which the first one on the list was anchoring or confirmation bias, which pretty much mean an investor whose thinking is subject to confirmation bias would be more likely to look for information that supports his or her original idea rather than investments to seek out information that contradicts it.
So basically you get one idea stuck in your head, you're sticking to it, and you're not pulling anchor.
Correct.
That's a dangerous field to play in. Just like when you have your drift boat out on the river, like they say that's the number one way you sink your boat, by the way, is the moment you put down the anchor or accidentally goes into the river when you're going through a rapid, spins your boat around. You got to watch out for that anchoring bias.
Right.
Can't just stick to your guns. You got to keep an open mind.
And it's about looking for information, even going back to the Ford GM conversation. As you don't really look at a lot of GM stuff because you're anchored to what you know. And I have the same thing with Tesla.
Right.
Do I want to drive an electric car? It'd be awesome.
I think it'd be fun.
Do I really want to own one? I have anxiety about it because I like to be able to hear the motor in the car and what's going on.
Can you imagine how much anxiety you'd have if, like, there was a line of people behind you, like, in a parking garage, and somehow your battery went dead and no one can escape? That's happened before.
I just get up, leave the keys, and walk away. And be like, it's yours now.
Just keep a gas-powered generator in your trunk if you own a Tesla.
Does that defy the purpose?
It defeats the purpose, but if you get in a sticky situation and you're way too far away, like, that's your option, right?
So, yeah. So anchoring bias is a big one because it's where people tend to lean. You can even translate that to news that you watch and things like that. You tend to watch news that supports your theories and wants instead of going through different sides to see different aspects.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is a really real thing. Also, another reason why it's important to have a team so you cannot get stuck in these anchoring, because my views and your views are completely, I could care less if I bought a Ford or a GM or a Dodge.
You're like, really, does it run and drive well? Right.
Will it get me to point A and point B without breaking down?
Do you even care about the fuel mileage?
I do.
You do?
I do.
Well, you've got a little bit of a long commute, so I guess that makes sense.
I do now. A year ago, not really as much.
Yeah. When gas is $4.50 a gallon or $4.70 or whatever it is, then you start to care a little bit more.
So I think another bias that's around is regret aversion bias.
Kind of like where you're basically just bracing for a poor outcome, and by default you invest with less risk and get a worse result than you could have. I think that's kind of regret aversion, right? Like you anticipate having regret, right?
Right.
And so when you feel like you're going in for a loss, you're going to take less risk, and then it gets you less potential return.
And it also, even at a loss, it forces you to not want to sell the position even if it's losing. It may continue to lose.
Oof. That sounds just terrible.
Because you don't want to regret it. Because once you sell it, you've realized it.
Yeah.
So it can cause...
Like you're admitting defeat in a way.
Yeah. So you can tend to hold on to it longer than you should. Which can go both
ways. Even when you're a professional advisor, that's a hard one, right? Like knowing when to like cut the line.
So
and
pull
just
the cord.
Yeah, pull the cord and just be like, you know what? I'm going to admit defeat on this one. It goes against our human nature in a way.
Right. Nobody likes to lose. Which I'm wondering if we have enough time before we get to break here.
I don't think we do. I think we've ran this one pretty long, don't you think?
We do. And
does that mean we need to take our first obscene profit break of the day?
Yes, we do. And so you are listening to True Wealth on KQEN News Radio 1240 AM, 93.9 PM. We'll be back after the break. Yeah.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Hey, gang. Welcome back. If you missed the first segment, we're talking about biases and being biased as an investor. So,
and if you did happen to miss it, we need you to go to the website, click on the podcast section, pull it up, listen to the whole thing. It's available at littlejohnfs.com.
Thanks, Matt. Thanks for saving
me. Well, that was my best David impersonation. Was it close?
It was nailed.
Oh, man. There we go.
So we're talking, I still can't figure, is it different biases?
Different biases. We talked about two, but we still got quite a few of them to talk about.
Yeah, there's still a lot. So the next one running down the list is the disposition effect bias.
You had to like just sum that up into a one-liner. Like, what would you call that? Like, I want a better name. Like, some of the names they come up with these are just ridiculous. I call it the greed effect, right? Like, that's how I look at it. Like, hey, I've made all of this money. And I have friends that do this. They go up 200% on a stock, right? Mm-hmm. They like to day trade. They'll call me and they'll be like, Matt, you're never going to believe this. I'm up 200%. And I'm like, awesome. So you sold it. And they're like, no, I'm going to hold it forever. And I'm like, but you're playing with something that's super volatile, super unknown. Are you sure you don't want to take at least some of the winnings? No, Matt, I'm telling you, I'm going to be a millionaire. And then I always get a call like a week later. Oh, man, I really probably should have took some winning on that. Why is that, bud? Oh, well, it tanked and now it's worth nothing. It's like, that's like the greed effect to me. So when I hear disposition effect bias, that's where my mind goes at least.
Well, yeah, you can also do it as... It can also be perceived as selling an investment either too early.
Yeah, so too early or too late.
As you know, you had something, you bought it, ran up 20%, sold it, and then it skyrocketed another 40.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always the, oh, crap, why did I sell it? Or losses is holding on to them too long. But then when you sell them, you're like, well, it's overcoming the losses.
Yeah. So just, I guess it's kind of a term for like just not understanding correct timing.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, full disclosure, if you could time everything perfect,
you can have our job.
I mean, I'm probably sitting in my garage, you know, not telling anybody about it.
That's true.
Sit there and double your money every day.
You better invite me over at least.
Right. And which a lot of times it could be a lot of the harm, like with the disposition effect, that bias is, it can cause you to sell things too soon, which can have adverse tax consequences as well, depending on the account.
Everyone always forgets that part, right? Like, there are tax consequences to when you buy or when you sell. Long-term capital gains, short-term capital gains. We got to think about these things.
And that all depends on the holding pattern, whether you hold it long or short, or over a year or less than a year. That's the difference consequences mm-hmm. you can have. Moving on, though, because that one isn't that exciting.
We could talk about that one all day.
We could.
But got ground to cover.
So this one is that me and Matt were talking about the break is hindsight bias.
Yeah, I was kind of confused on that one because I hadn't heard that term before, and I feel like you had a really good explanation as to what it is.
So I'm going to throw a definition out there for is, what hindsight bias means, it leads an investor to believe after the fact that the onset of a past event was predictable and completely obvious. In fact, the event could not have been reasonably predicted.
Do you have an example of an event like that?
I do, and I mean, this is the best way that I can describe the event. So this example is COVID.
Okay.
So when COVID happened, it wrecked the market.
Do you have like a little PTSD from the COVID experience, like the super early mornings and watching the market fall? I mean, what was your biggest day that you remember seeing the markets move?
I can't remember the exact day, but when they shut down trading for a partial of the day, that can make you a little bit crazy.
Yeah, I bet.
But it also, what the hindsight bias is because the market dropped so fast. I think it was like 35% in like a matter of 4 weeks. But the recovery was almost just as fast.
Yeah, I mean, it fell off the face of the earth. It came right back, and you're probably sitting there trying to time this thing, right? Like, you're seeing it fall. You can't get it perfect unless you're a magician.
Right.
But did you have any type of hindsight bias? Like, after COVID's over, like, saying, oh, I should have known that was the bottom. Did you experience any of it yourself?
Yes, I mean, to an extent. Did, but also you can't anticipate also the government funding, the business funding, the personal funding.
There are so many variables.
And I mean, when you look back at it, you're like, oh, duh. I mean, why would I, you know, sell a lot of restaurant, anything that has to do with restaurant, sell all that and buy, you know, technology, Zoom. You know, at that time, you had even like AMC and...
Yeah, if we could all have predicted the GameStop and AMC craze.
Which we'll end up circling back to the GameStop and AMC stuff here in a little bit. But it's just a matter of looking back after the fact and saying, oh, I should have done it differently. Which the reality of it is, a week from now, a month from now, a year from now, crazy things can happen.
Mm-hmm.
And when it happens, it can spark panic. And then it can spark, it makes money move out and then in different segments of the market. And it's just the cause that you look back into it and be like, oh, I should have thought of that.
Mm-hmm.
But at the time, not always.
Right. But, you know, I'm looking down the list. My eye keeps wandering down this list of all of these different types of biases. And when you started talking about GameStop and AMC, it kind of is a natural transition, for me at least, into the familiarity bias, right? Like, what are you familiar with? And I've seen this from people before, right? Where, you know, maybe for the gamer, right? It's like, hey, I know GameStop. I'm interested in investing in that. Just like maybe NVIDIA. Hey, my computer has an NVIDIA processor in it. I'm familiar with this company. Therefore, I want to own it. And so I feel like a lot of the times that can lead to a less than desirable outcome because you're taking on greater risk because maybe you didn't diversify enough.
Okay.
And you only invested in what you knew in. But there's also the flip side of that, right? Where it's like there's that general old rule of like, don't invest into things you have no idea what they are. Because right. I've seen people get burned really, really bad on that. So it's a really fine line, in my opinion, because you have to be familiar with your investments to a certain extent. But at the same time, you can't just invest in things that make you smile.
Yes. And so I'm going to throw another bias at you.
Oh, my gosh.
To kind of go along with that.
I hope everyone that's listening has a pen and paper out and they're just like taking notes because we're hitting you with a ton of different information. So if you missed it and you're just tuning in, I'm going to pull another David. You can always go back to the podcast and check
That's
it out.
Right.
Okay, what do you got for me, Justin?
It is herd behavior bias.
Well, that one's not on my list, so I'm going to let you run with this.
And so that was the, you know, the GameStop AMC trade that, you know, all the Reddit boards were blowing it up that all these people are investing it. So it's like, let's jump on board.
And but, boy, did they.
But depending on when you jumped on board.
That's true.
Or when you decided to jump off board, I guess, really can change that. So the media especially, because everything's so media driven right now, is people can start jumping on board with what everybody else is saying, you know, on social media, even though it might not be a sound investment.
Mm-hmm. And then they end up, once they're in it, sometimes they have a hard time knowing when to let go. And we talked about that earlier in the show, right? Like, how many people did you know that jumped on a GameStop or an AMC trade And then they're like, I'm just holding it to the moon. That was the coin phrase. I'm holding it to the moon. And unfortunately, for a lot of those people, that rocket ship never landed on the moon.
I got to throw my brother on the bus because he's still on.
Oh,
some.
On air, too.
Yeah. Well, he lives in New Hampshire,
brotherly
so he's
love.
Not going to hear it.
Good brotherly love.
But the herd behavior really can, it depends on when you get the information, mm-hmm. it can really backfire. It's yeah. just because if you're jumping on the boat too late
mm-hmm.
and it's already been ran up, not including the fundamental analysis or anything like that, it's just running up, it can really cost you.
Mm-hmm.
Which it can happen. Holding things too long is a normal thing. It can happen personally investing.
Mm-hmm.
It can happen professionally investing. You want it to go crazy. You want it to go to the moon and you want it to be consistent. And the reality of it isn't always.
Yeah. And I think like what we talked about earlier when we mentioned that's the benefit of having an investment committee, right?
Yeah.
Like when you're there on your own, clicking through the buttons, the buys and the sells, mm-hmm. you've only got one person to listen to. It's you, right?
Right?
Like you're the only one that's influencing that decision. Whereas when you're with a professional firm, you have multiple people looking at this thing. You're not going to be as prone as a committee to make a rash decision.
Yes. People are emotional.
How can you not be, right? Like it's your money. Like you yes. worked really hard for it. Yeah.
And even as an investment professional, we can get emotional.
Oh, yeah.
That's why there is multiple of us, because it really is. It's sometimes walk in the office and one of us has to calm David down, or one of us has to calm me down or you down.
Yep.
Just because we start, depends also what we're reading. We're reading this. This is going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
20 minutes later, it's like, all right, guys, let's have a rational conversation about this.
Yeah, I feel like that's another type of bias. You read too much media, too many news articles.
Get off your phone.
Look at the fundamentals.
Right. But it looks like we're coming up again.
We are on another break, aren't we? They just make us take so many of these profit breaks.
Yes.
Like, gosh.
And this is Justin Brugman, and I'm with
Matt Dixon.
And you're listening to True Wealth on KQN 1240 AM, 93.9 FM.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Hey, gang. Welcome back. This is Justin Brugman, and I'm with
Matt Dixon.
And you're listening to True Wealth. Again, we're going to go back and say none of this was investment advice.
Correct.
If you have questions or want to talk, you can always reach us at
541-375-0898. That's where you go to get the real advice.
Or shoot us an email at info@littlejohnfs.com.
There we go.
So, Matt, you were bringing up another bias, is information bias.
Yeah, it wasn't on our list today, but I happened to find it on my phone. And I think it's worth talking about because I think we're all guilty of it sometimes. And it happens when we go on the Google machine and we start looking up information and it's like it's useless, right? Like you see an article that pops up where someone wrote the article because they have some skin in the game, right? Like they're profiting from the news that they're spreading.
Okay.
It's just useless info. Whatever it is, it's useless. And you buy into it, you read it, and you're convicted by it. Whereas you would have been better off had you just read the prospectus, right? Like read the actual info on the investment that you're looking at and said, hey, does this meet my investment objective? And if it does, then maybe you consider it. But you can't take bad information into account and use that as a bias in your investments. And also, on top of that, I'm going to add, inside of that framework of your information biases, checking the daily stock price. I know way too many people that live in that daily moment of what is it worth today at this very moment, right? Like, look at last week. Look, I mean, if you had checked your accounts and you were just solely invested in the S&P last week,
mm-hmm.
wasn't it like at 41.60 and today it's at 45 something? So, I mean, look at the growth in just a week.
I think it was since close of last Tuesday to this Tuesday, I think it was about 4.3% or something like that. But that's still huge.
Yeah, it is.
It's a big 1 week move.
Yeah. So when we're using bad information and checking accounts on an hourly, daily, or minute basis, we are more prone to do unrational, silly things. Do you agree?
I do, because I think that when you look at certain positions, you know, because we watch this all day, every day.
Yeah, it. I start dreaming about it, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you'll wake up in the middle of the night thinking about, like, a stock price, and you're like, gosh, I need to get this under control. I've been watching too many charts.
Let me pull up futures. It's 2:30 in the morning.
Are you guilty of that?
All the time.
Okay. Sounds like you're the guy I need to hire to watch my stuff. That's a sales pitch right there.
But the realization of that is that sometimes stocks move like 8 to 10% intraday movement.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a lot of times if you look at, you know, your account or everything every day, at least you're getting what it opened at, what it closed.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of times you don't see what happens between that.
Or you don't adjust the chart to actually look back 6 months like, oh, something's up 30% today. Well, it's down 85% in the last 2 months. So that move isn't quite as impressive.
So, and that's a great one. I like the information bias. That's great. Another one to kind of, which this one is interesting as well, is the worry bias.
Mm.
Especially when you go through times where volatility, so movement up and down in the market, is high.
And we've seen a lot of that lately.
We have seen a lot of that. You have a rising interest rate environment. You have a war between Russia and Ukraine. That's a horrible situation.
Mm-hmm.
But people start to worry.
Yeah.
Which, as an investor and an investment advisor, investing is what, Matt?
Being rational, calm, and well thought out.
And it's long term.
Yeah.
Not necessarily is it's always on a bad day that people worry. And if the next,
you don't get very many phone calls when the market goes up 10%, but man, you better believe if it goes down 10%, the phone's ringing.
And so what it does is that's why, as an investor, you have a risk tolerance, which in that just really is how much up and down swings is tolerable to where you can still sleep at night.
Yeah.
So what happens is the worry bias is if you start worrying all the time, your risk in theory goes way down.
I like how you said in theory. That's an important piece, I feel like, because just because that's what makes you sleep at night doesn't necessarily mean that's what's best for your situation.
It's the short-term emotion.
Exactly.
And that's why, as an investor, you have a risk tolerance. I mean, not necessarily everybody does. Depends if you do your own, then you might not necessarily have one. You just go buy the things you like, or, you know, do your research in your own way. But as like a client, as an investor, you stay between the risk spectrum, which you have upside potential and downside exposure, which it's the risk reward relationship that you're willing to accept. And that risk tolerance can change.
It's true.
From day to day, it can change, but that's not reality. This is long term. Are you looking 12 months from now, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, 20 or more from now? It should change on how you evaluate risk.
Yep.
Because even with, you know, a recent, you know, people that went super risk adverse during COVID when it dropped 35%.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, I'm pulling all my money. I'm going to sit in cash because I'm scared.
Well, and we saw it with the Russia-Ukraine thing, too.
True.
I'm sure you can count multiple people that said, you know, this is World War III. This is the end of the world. And I can't stomach to be part of the investment pool.
And that's perfectly fine.
Mm-hmm.
But it also needs to be a rational decision, not a short-term emotional one.
Exactly.
Because even the R thoughts is markets price things in before we're even talking about it.
It's amazing how fast they react to information. Like, you'll wake up to a stock and it's like, why is the price like this? And then you find out, oh, an hour later. That's why, you know, they beat earnings or whatever the case may be. The information moves super, super fast.
Yes. The worrying bias is one that really can, it's really relatable. And there's always terms. When people get nervous, maybe you should get greedy. And when people are greedy, then maybe you should get nervous.
Are you quoting the famous Warren Buffett?
Maybe.
I think you are. I like that, Justin.
Could
well, well placed.
But the reality of it is this is investing is long term. And so the short term volatility, assuming non-economic collapses, you want to own the positions that you want to own long term.
It's true. And I think another piece of that is, I mean, if we look at it, trend-wise, the markets, in, at least in my opinion, have started to react faster, right? Like information travels faster, the markets are moving faster, and we've seen some pretty, you know, the market get beat up pretty bad by the numbers, but at the same time, we've also seen it recover typically a little faster than it has in the past, because I think part of that is just the information is traveling faster. You add things in there like computer trading on these huge block trades.
Mm-hmm.
And so the true price is reflected quicker. So,
and it could be. And also it changes it a little bit too because the fixed income environment,
mm-hmm.
there's not really a safe place to go that you're going to make fixed money.
Yeah.
I mean, you can go...
You're saying the bond market's beat up a little
bond
bit.
Bond market, and you can go to even a 12-month CD. I don't remember what the rates are. I know what they were a couple of months ago. It's like, you know, 0.4% for 12 months.
Right, and when inflation is running at, they claim seven. Yeah,
yeah.
We're chuckling under our breath there. But, yeah, so it's got to make sense. The investment has to make sense.
When two bags of groceries used to cost $40, now one.
Yeah. We're all feeling that hurt.
Yes. So the biases is real, which, where are we at?
We've covered a lot of them today, haven't we? So we've gone over anchoring bias, which is just, you know, holding on there for and supporting those opinions and original ideas a little too long. We covered, what was the other one? Regret aversion, was it?
Mm-hmm.
Which was just bracing for poor outcomes, and in turn you get some poor results.
Mm-hmm.
And what was the third one?
The mental accounting was one.
Oh, yeah. You talked about mental accounting and how we process that. That was good. And if you missed any of this, go back to the podcast. I'm going to say it again. You can't miss this stuff. It's gold. And make sure to sharpen your pencil, get out your notebook, take lots of notes, because we're throwing a lot of information at you today.
And so... Well, let's see. The last one to cover that I'm kind of thinking.
I don't know that we have time for it though. Like, I feel like after the break we hit them with this.
We can't
give them the best.
And we're gonna talk a little about being overconfident.
Okay,
that'll be fun.
You're
so
humble me on air, huh?
I am.
Okay.
And so we'll be right back. You're listening to True Wealth. My name is Justin Bruggeman. I'm here with
Matt Dixon.
And you're listening to News Radio 1240. KQEN 93.9 FM.
There we go.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Hey, gang. Welcome back. My name is Justin Brugman. I'm with
Matt Dixon.
And we were just going through biases as an investor.
And we've gone through a lot. We've gone through probably 6 or 7 of them already.
Yeah, we skipped around a little bit, so we're still circling back.
Yeah, but we do have one more before the day's over.
Might be two.
Do we have two? Okay. I think we saved one of the better ones for last because I think it kind of applies to what we're seeing right now. So, Justin, what's the hottest sector right now?
Energy.
I mean, I think that everyone can see it, right? Like, you go to the pump, gas is expensive. Oil stocks, energy stocks are through the roof. They've had a huge year-to-date movement.
Right.
And I think it's easy for people to be like, hey, why don't I invest in energy? And then, but what happens if energy starts to tail off? And then you go and you say, I don't know, pick one, pharmaceuticals. Pharmaceuticals blows up. And then you try and chase that trend.
Okay.
And then, you know, 3 months from now, it's consumer staples. And you're chasing that trend. And then tech starts to boom. And you're on the tech bandwagon.
Right.
I feel like that's a hard thing to chase. And they have a name for it.
Sector rotation.
Sector rotation and trend chasing.
Yep.
Your trend chasing bias.
Okay. Yes.
So, What's your thoughts on trend chasing? I mean, have you seen it before? What is your overall thought process on this one?
Trend chasing, and which can also relate to momentum in a stock as well. So it doesn't mean that it can't.
Yeah,
it can't pan out.
Right.
But when you're looking at the trend chasing aspect, that's why, as an investor, you maintain diversification.
That I was hoping you'd get to that one because that's, I agree 100%. Like if you chase a trend, like if you're all in energy and then somehow the war in Ukraine ends tomorrow and Russia is magically forgiven by the world and they send a gift to the United States of 100 million barrels of oil and energy collapses overnight, all of your investments just took a huge hit if you're all in energy.
Yes.
And that's pretty theoretical and wild.
Yes.
But the exaggeration makes for a good point, I think.
But the devil's advocate of that is year to date, if you were 100% in energy,
yes,
you're a happy camper right now.
Yeah, whereas the market as a whole still is kind of sad.
It's still struggling a little bit. So trend chasing is hard because usually by the time you jump on board, it might be a little bit too late.
A little too slow to pull the trigger.
Yeah, and that can be common.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to foresee the future, know when something's going to peak, know when something's going to kind of end. And it happens so fast, right? Like, think back 6 months ago. I mean, we were seeing a completely different story than we are today. And so, unless you are super in tune with the markets and watching this every single day and reading all of the reports and doing all of the investment, you know, critiques and analysis, it's a hard thing to do.
It is. Trend chasing and market timing is a very hard thing. And then that's why maintaining diversification is important, is because energy can make up 20% of your portfolio at a certain given time.
But maybe not 100%.
Not 100%.
Yeah.
Which, and that's where it can outweigh, is, you know, every segment of the market doesn't move in together.
Right.
They move differently. Sometimes real estate's way up. Sometimes tech's way up. And so it really does change. The amount of diversification can also hurt, and it can benefit. Which, if you're super overly diversified, then you can't target certain sections and be overweight in those sections, which it can lag on returns.
And you're really losing out on that potential big gain, too, when you're overly diversified. Because when was the last time you saw the market just explode year after year to the tune of 35%.
Well, it doesn't go on forever.
Yeah.
We wish it did. It'd make our jobs a lot easier.
Oh, yeah. Can that happen, please?
Right. So another one kind of interesting as we're wrapping up here the last few minutes is overconfidence bias.
Okay.
Which, and this is going to turn around and wrap right back into some diversification, is if you are completely confident in a specific sector or a specific stock.
Can we extend that to the abilities too? Like you're overconfident in your own abilities?
Yes.
Okay.
And that can happen. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you just go buy it, take everything you got and you buy one certain thing and you're like, good. Some people can win. Some people will lose really hard doing it that way. So it's more the overconfidence is understand what you invest in.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not, you know, throwing a dart at a dartboard, you know, that just says, let's buy it. You know, I've talked to David about it. He said no, but
I'm going to vote yes on that just because I like darts, but like,
what's the stock of the day? Pop.
It'd be interesting to actually get like a graph and start charting like your returns based off of
and see how often you're right.
Yeah.
I'm sure they've done studies on it.
I feel like you'd also have to blindfold me too because I'd be like trying to hit my favorite ones.
Right. Like I'm going to aim bottom right.
I'm aiming for that Ford stock that
right.
we talked about earlier. And no, that's not investment advice.
And so, you know, overconfidence can be a thing. And also, it's okay to come and ask questions. So even if you're doing it on your own, you can come in and run investment ideas by us and we'll give us your opinion.
Yeah, I'd like to think that we're pretty friendly.
I think we can do that.
Okay.
And I know we're running out of time. So if you need to reach out to us, 541-375-0898 or info@littlejohnfs.com. I am Justin Brugman and I'm with
Matt Dixon.
And you're listening to KQEN 1240 AM 93.9 FM.